Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm a feminist, but tonight, as I was getting ready for the show, I was listening to Julia Gillard's amazing misogyny speech to give myself a bit of a... to give myself a bit of a feminist G-up. And it was only when she got to the part where she quotes Tony Abbott saying, what the housewives of Australia need to understand as they do the ironing, that I realised I was doing the ironing. Wow. Literally ironing my trousers tonight. And then I was like, well, I'm not helping your cause. So
Tony Abbott wasn't wrong about everything. But, you know, no, in a stopped clock way...
Are you some big onion fan or something like... they are delicious not being cooked.
No, I mean, Tony Abbott anticipated that you would iron at some point. That's literally the only thing. I mean,
makes it sound like he's watching me. He could be. Hello, Tony, if you're listening.
I mean, if you don't want him to watch, turn off the webcam.
Girl's got to make money somehow.
I'm a feminist... but tonight for the show, I had my makeup done. And what my makeup artist told me, the way to find your perfect nude lip is you match it to your nipple. And I realized this was the first time in my life I was genuinely interested in the Free the Nipple Instagram campaign. I've never really been like, oh, let's all get our nipples out. Except when I heard that, because I'm quite keen now at getting them out in Sephora. Or Space NK in the UK.
Do you know what's made me go, I would be worried that my perfect nude lip would have a little bit of hair on it. Not much, but, I should do something about that. That kind of...
And you don't have to. Nobody has to remove their hair, but... If you would, if
it's not like taking your shoes off when you come into a house. Sorry, excuse me.
You do one.
All right.
We've got...
I'm a feminist. I'm a feminist, but one of my side quests is to find the perfect clothes peg. I'm obsessed with finding the perfect peg. How sad is that?
Unforgivable,
I've just admitted to ironing, and now I'm going on about pegs.
Unforgivable, Cal.
They have to be big enough that you can hold them up, but you don't want them too big because then the clothing falls out between the peg and the clothesline. And they need to be bright and colourful, but then the plastic ones, just, you know, in the sun, they don't last. Anyway, it's...
I can't stop imagining them on your nipples now, and I don't know what... It's just a... I'm linking the two ideas, and it's got very kinky very fast. Yeah. It's so early in the show. I'm a feminist, but my makeup artist in Sydney, Emily Fawcett Makeup, just a shout out there, she's fantastic. She also told me, because she's originally from the UK, and she also told me that she's out here on one of those working holiday visas that was, yep, big fan of working holiday visas, big up. And what she told me was, you do your first year here, and I'd never heard of this before, but she did 1 year as a young woman wanting to work in Australia as a makeup artist. In order to extend that and get a second year, she had to go and work on a farm for 3 months. I have never heard about this, and I was really fascinated by it. What I can't work out, though, is this very right-wing because you're forcing people who are short-term immigrants into indentured servitude for the privilege of being in your borders? Or is it very left-wing because we should all be helping grow the food and so it's quite socialist and farms need help? And that's not popular. And... But, like, someone's got to grow the food, and if it's not growing, like, is it, should we all, like, jury duty, spend time doing things that matter? Like, it's one of the reasons the environment's so shit is we don't really know how our food's grown, and we're wasteful, and we don't think about these things. And I couldn't work it out, and I was just thinking about it. And then I suddenly thought, God, if I didn't have an Australian passport, and I had done 1 year of comedy here, and I wanted to do a second one, and in order to do that, I had to go and pick bananas or groom avocados... I'm a feminist, but this would be my last show. I'm just so bad at that kind of thing. I'd be such a complainer.
I don't know that avocados get groomed, do they? Or are they being groomed by an older avocado? Like, is there... Being catfished by another fruit. Turns out he wasn't a banana. It was a 12-year-old pear.
Just thought, I don't know what you do with avocados, but it feels like you don't. You must foster them. Encourage them.
Foster an avocado.
Like a foster child avocado. I don't know, you must groom... What do you do? Does someone know? Not peel them. I mean, when you're growing, you're farming them. This is city people. You peel them.
Yep.
They appear magically at some kind of artisan grocer's on the end of your street, run by a hipster... You pull the stone out and you mash them and smash them and, yeah. Anyway.
They grow on trees.
They grow on trees.
We knew that bit.
I don't know, somehow. Anyway, you do one.
All right. I'm a feminist, but in my side quest to find the perfect pig, I secretly hope that the perfect pig manufacturer is a fan of the Guilty Feminist podcast and sends me the perfect pig. It's a genuine hope.
I'm a feminist, but tonight my Uber driver was so hot that I wrote a note in the notes on my phone and showed it to my sister in the back of the car while he was driving that said, "Oh God, our Uber driver is so hot." And then out of nowhere, like some kind of magic, and I'm going to do the accent. I love the Australian accent. And it is the only accent I can do. So if you do not like me doing the Australian accent because you think in some way it's mocking the Australian accent, please understand I love it so much that it's fun for my mouth to make that shape.
But also, it's the accent you started out with.
I don't feel I'm appropriating it.
You're reappropriating it off yourself.
That's all I'm saying.
You're disguising yourself as Deborah Frances White. It's outrageous.
Okay, so I'm just saying that. I've ruined the bit now because I've apologised for it. Why am I apologising for it? It's silly. Okay, all right. Every part of the show offends somebody.
Well, that's a nice logo to go with, isn't it?
It's true, though. I will get a complaint about every line of the show, but all from a different person. If I get 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 complaints about the same bit, I know... I apologise.
I think there's going to be some angry emails from avocados for this one. So.
Okay. I'm a feminist, but tonight my Uber driver was so hot that I wrote a note to myself. I've done this bit. However, and then he said, "Don't know if I've turned the stove off or not. I'm making a ragu. I don't know if when I get home, I'm going to have a lovely ragu. or no possessions. And then he said, I said, oh, do you need to go round? Because we're still in Tamarama, where he was from as well. We'd established that. I said, do you need to turn around and check? And he went, no, it's going to keep the night exciting. Then he said, this is true, he said, I've never felt so alive. Now,
oh, I've never thought of a ragu as having exciting possibilities like that.
And I was like, right, we're off. It was a full half hour across Sydney, and I was like, you've opened the door, buddy. I'm going right through. So I started chatting to him. I said, do you drive Uber a lot? He said, yeah, I drive a lot. And I said, is this your main job? And he went, no, I'm an actor. My sister says, oh, well, my sister is a comedian and she's also a writer and she writes scripts. You know, basically setting us up on a fabulous date. And so then he got a lot more interested in us. And he said, what's the show? And I said, The Guilty Feminist. Okay, this is a real I'm a feminist, but I shouldn't say this. Look, I'll tell
you. Well, you can't stop now.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, but I'm going to cut this out of the podcast, okay? Okay, I might have said, oh God, I can't believe I'm telling you this. He was very hot. Okay. I said, you should come if you want to, Vincent. I was sort of angling to see if he was single. I'm not single, but, you know, it didn't matter. It's nice to know if you're flirting with an open door or a closed door. Anyway, so I said, or the door half open, you know, a cat flap. I went, there's a lot of women in the audience. I pimped you out, I'm really sorry. I pimped you out. I said, the audience is probably 80% female. And he went, oh, will they be open to an advance though or not? Because of the nature of your show. And I said, it's called The Guilty Feminist, Vincent. And he went, oh, okay, then, yeah, no, that's... And he said, no, I'm really interested in this. What are the main tenets for a man to be considered feminist now? Like, what should I be doing? What are the tent poles? And I said, well, the main thing I would say is if there are no women in the room and a man says something that's othering or denigrating to a woman, do you speak up? And he said, oh, no, I'd say something. And I said, I find, some men have said to me that they find taking the piss is better than anything. So we were talking about strategies. And I said, what would you do? And he said, I would say, come on, fuckwit, G up. I've never heard G up before, but you said it tonight too. It's clearly an Australian thing.
Yeah, G up. Yeah, we both use G up independently.
Never heard of it. I mean, only for a horse.
Well, maybe it was a horse that was being sexist.
But then he said, you know, we're all the same. Any bigotry, sexism, racism, homophobia, we say something. And he said, the thing we've got to learn is you've got to feel comfortable with the discomfort, Vincent. Somehow we got onto Michael Fassbender's penis size. I blame my sister. Live from the Enmore Theatre in Sydney, the sponsor of the show presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, and guest co-host Carl Wilson and very special guest Julia Gillard, talking about leadership. Thank you very much, Carl Wilson. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White. I'm with Carl Wilson, and tonight we're talking about leadership. They're big fans.
That's all we've got time for. Thank you for coming. What a big, welcome.
I mean, it was an exceptional... It was almost more welcoming than it was for me, and I've made a 24-hour flight for this. So, in a very real way, Cal, you've come from Melbourne.
It's true, I have. And I wore sneakers that are made of mesh because I didn't know it rained in Sydney. But I've been sieving my feet.
Yes. A biblical proportions of rain that I have brought with me. Biblical. I mean, it's something to do with the Messiah, for sure, in the second row.
Where's the Messiah?
There's a suckling baby and a Madonna baby. In the second row.
Oh, yes, I can see. You do look like a Madonna. You need to have someone hold up like a gold dinner plate behind your head to do the kind of
just to be
halo
clear,
thing.
We do mean Madonna, the mother of God, and not Madonna, the pop singer who reinvents herself every three
The mother
years.
Of Rocco.
Oh, the mother
I
of Rocco.
I can't remember the other ones.
Lords.
Carla.
And the David.
David and Elizabeth.
Yep. Oh, wow, what is that a new one?
I'm so glad we've got onto this train of thought.
When is there an Elizabeth?
Isn't there an Elizabeth?
That's, you've made that up.
Oh, am I awake? What's happening?
Any Madonna fans in who can confirm how many children Madonna has? I believe it to be three.
I think it's four. Two girls and four, two boys.
Right. That's like The Price is Right, isn't it? Okay, all right. Well, somebody
glad we've got that sorted out.
Somebody needs to be on that. Is there a man in the front row? Yes, always. I don't know why they sit there, but I genuinely don't understand, because I would not have the confidence at a men's rights activist conference. Middle of the front row, and there's always a cisgendered man in the middle of the front row.
What I'm enjoying is that I can see three, and I'm loving their body language. There's a bit of going on.
It's shifted a bit since we've started talking about it. Mm. Just, sir, what's your name? Dan. Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for being a feminist. I assume you are and you've not been brought to learn. Did someone bring you? He said, I brought her. Dan. Your sex appeal has just rocketed. That was the noise of 2,000 women having a small orgasm. I brought her. I mean, men have to do so fucking little to get credit.
I mean, how feminist is it, though, to force a woman to come to a feminist podcast?
He didn't say he forced her. Dan values consent, don't you, Dan? More than anything, Dan, don't you? I don't want to put words in your mouth, Dan, but I am. I can't stop myself. Dan, tell us more about the sentence, I brought her.
It's her favourite podcast.
Okay. And you got the tickets. Oh, I got the tickets for her birthday. Are we your birthday present? Oh.
Wow, I've never been there before.
Up our game. We're somebody's birthday present. Is it a significant birthday?
Every year is a significant birthday.
That's actually true. That's so true. If you've lived another year, it's significant. You are a font of wisdom, you two, aren't you?
Yeah. Can I just say to you, Dan, that I would like to reassure you that the worst has happened. Like, this is it. Like, it doesn't get... You're done now. But that guy... Bless him.
Well, look how relaxed Dan is now. I don't want to call you Dan's girlfriend because this is a feminist show. And I don't want to assume you're his girlfriend either. There could be all sorts of situations here. You could be his sister, his wife, his friend. We don't know.
And you're not giving us any indication.
No. She's not even blinking. She's just staring straight ahead going, you would be great in a police state. And, you know, and we need feminists who will not cave in a police state. That's, the world is veering right sharply. And you have the goods. Can I ask what your name is? Nicole. Okay. And there's another Nicole cheering in solidarity. Feminists are wonderful, aren't they? It's like, yes, up the Nicoles! Nicoles will smash the patriarchy. So Dan and Nicole, do you listen to the podcast too, Dan?
Occasionally.
Okay.
Oh, he's getting bold.
Occasionally.
Occasionally. You don't own me.
No. Why do you only listen occasionally when it's Nicole's favourite show? I mean, this is what she lives and breathes for. And you don't even know what's going on.
You know how I said the worst had happened?
Dan. No, Dan and Nicole, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it very much. And well done getting it. You must have got in early to get front row seats.
Oh, poised at the computer.
You were sitting there poised at the computer. Again, men have to do What I think is, a man cannot be a guilty feminist. A man can only be a smug feminist. Because...
Oh, I would hate that podcast.
It's... there's plenty out there, don't worry. It's not what they're called, but it's the subtext. That sounds bitchy, doesn't it? Like I listen to other podcasts, judging them. I don't. I just assume they're out there. I just think men... They're not guilty about their... we're all going, am I getting it right?
They're excited about it.
Well, men tell you they're a feminist the way they tell you they've done the washing up. And I'm a feminist. And all I have to do is say it. They don't have to prove it at all. Do you feel like a natural leader, Carol?
I am willing to do anything second. I'm a great sidekick. That's what I am. I'm an excellent sidekick. I'm like the piglet to your poo. Which is a horrible way to phrase it, but...
So many levels.
Oh, you don't care. She's a poo piglet. Not great.
See, I don't think of myself as a leader, but I think I'm a great... I want to be at the centre with pushing energy in all different directions. I do not want to be at the front
You're sort of the catalyst, is that what you're saying?
I'm a catalyst more
than a cat lady, which is not as exciting.
I am also that. I feel like I'm more of a catalyst than a leader. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a better brand of leadership. I think the sort of, I'm at the front telling everyone what to do and getting everyone to salute and adore me is a very patriarchal style of leadership. And why should we do it? I think we just model ourselves on masculine power structures that, you know, if they worked, you know, absolutely. Why reinvent the wheel? But after 10,000 years of masculine patriarchal leadership, I look at the environment, to name just one thing, and what I see is the end of the fucking world. Look at the financial system, and I see what they were going for. But what I am now looking at is the end of the fucking world.
It does feel like the end of time, doesn't it? The end days, like the Book of Revelation, like we're flicking through to go, oh, what's happening next? You know, that sort of...
Well, one thing about all the riders of the horses, of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, all men. That's all I'm saying.
I guess, I don't know. I don't know why my mind has gone straight to the four My Little Ponies of the apocalypse. Like, is there... I don't know. How cute would that be? How cute would that be?
For some stand-up comedy. Yeah. So please welcome to the stage the fabulous Carol Wilson.
Yeah. Do you know what's really annoying about this iPad? This is not what I'm going to be talking about, but it reacts to cat's feet. It reacts to cat's feet, and my cats will walk across my iPad and change the website I'm on, but also like things that I didn't like. And it came to a head one evening where Pirate, our cat, likes to get in anything that's a space. So he was trying to get into my husband's pocket. And he'd got his paw down into my husband's pocket and was like poking and poking and poking. His phone was in there. And what the cat managed to do was get on the local buy, sell and swap page, like some fake flowers, and make the inquiry, are these still available? 3 times. And Chris only realised what had happened when he got an email from the woman going, are you still interested in the flowers? Anyway. So, as I said before, I don't consider myself a leader. I'm happy to be second. I'm happy to be like, yeah, come on, let's go. But I don't want to be out the front leading. And so I was thinking, like, what actually is the hallmark of a great leader? And I thought, what better place to look than the internet to find inspiring leadership quotes? So I was having a little look around, and they all seem to be the same sort of top 50 quotes. And some of them I thought this was quite beautiful. This is from Edith Wharton. There are two ways of spreading light, to be the candle or the mirror that reflects it. Well, that's quite beautiful. Like, if I was her, I would have given myself the afternoon off. I would have been like, I'd be high-fiving myself around the house, I'd be really happy, right? But then I was looking at some others. A guy called Joel A. Barker said, a leader is a person you will follow to a place you would not go by yourself, which to me sounds more like a Weimaraner. You know, I wouldn't normally go down into this alleyway, but I feel safe with you, Maverick. John Maxwell. The pessimist complains about the wind. The optimist expects it to change. The leader adjusts the sails. So I think what he's saying is successful leaders can afford yachts. I think that's... this is one I quite liked from W. Fusselman. Today a reader, tomorrow a leader. Now, I think if that were true, libraries would be full of child prime ministers, wouldn't they? Like, it's, I don't think it follows. I think he's fallen into that trap of going, well, it rhymes, so it must be true. There's a few of those. Like, I'll just make one up. Like, girls who are Flemish have no blemish. Girls from Hackney, full of acne. That's not true. That is, like, there's no evidence for that. But Fusselman would probably go, well, I'll take that at face value. Like, it's just... The big one, of course, like that is like God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, which is bullshit. She didn't. She made them both. She made Adam and Eve, and she made Adam and Steve. And for the sake of their privacy, Adam and Steve said, do you mind not putting us in the Bible? Some of the neighbours aren't that great. We don't really want the publicity. We just want to get on with our lives, turn Eden into a really great organic market garden. And God said, of course, I really get it. I'm so sorry about the bigots. And Adam and Steve are like, look, it's a tough one. You know, you can't help who your fans are. You can't help that. You're appealing to a really wide demographic base. Some of them are lovely. The other ones, not so much. And God said, well, look, thanks guys, for being so great about it. Good luck with the garden. And when they're in season, I'd like 8 bushels of strawberries. I'm having some friends over, and Buddha loves a fruit salad. I got quite into that one. I thought about that one quite a lot. And then I moved on to a quote from Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, or COO. She was the one that wrote the book Lean In, which I really identified with because I am constantly leaning in because my hearing is terrible, and if there's any background noise, there's no chance I'll hear a word you're saying. Anyway, Sheryl said, leadership is about making others better as a result of your presence and making sure that impact lasts in your absence. Which I thought, well, that could apply to a leader, but also to Santa. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Like, maybe that is why Scott Morrison went to Hawaii while the fires were so bad. Because he still believes in Santa, and he was hoping he'd get some more coal. Gosh, he's going to be so upset when he listens to this, isn't he? I mean, but actually, looking at it seriously, maybe Santa is a great leader. I mean, everybody loves Santa. People dress up to be like him. Parents want photos of their kids standing next to people that just look like him. You know, he's obviously doing something right. So maybe he is a great leader. Although I would say he's not. He only works one day a year. But, you know, great leaders know how to delegate. And they also know how to look after their team. And he let all of the other reindeer bully the shit out of Rudolph. He's ostracised poor Rudolph, he's mocked for his appearance. Santa does nothing, nothing. I think part of the toxic sleigh environment is the gender imbalance. Too many male reindeer. Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid, and then you've got Blitzen. Only one woman reindeer, Donna. I know some of you go, well, what about Vixen? And I'm like, yeah, well, of course, she was an incredible drag queen in season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race. But Rudolph, he's left to his own lonely devices. Santa only turns up for Rudolph when it's poor weather conditions on Christmas Eve. Suddenly, he needs a reindeer with lights. And also, just on a safety level, his nose is red, and you're only allowed to have white lights at the front. So strictly speaking, Santa is driving a non-compliant reindeer in what is basically a high-speed, hostile working environment. It's not great leadership. Afterwards, all of the other reindeer suddenly love Rudolph and act like they've never excluded him. If I was Rudolph, I wouldn't be eating up all the insincere attention. I'd be all like, fuck the lot of you! I'm going to saw my antlers off and start my own business as a one-horse open sleigh. And what's more, I'm going to do home deliveries from Adam and Steve's all-organic snakeless market garden. Stick that in your sack and smoke it, Santa. So that's another view of leadership. But I'll end on the one that I really love, and this, I genuinely love this. This was from Eleanor Roosevelt. Do what you feel in your heart to be right, for you'll be criticised anyway. I love that. She hadn't even been on the internet.
Carl Wilson, everybody!
Hi there, this is Tom Selinsky, the producer of the podcast. Deborah's still on tour in Australia and unable to get to a microphone. So here are a few things you might want to look out for. Deborah and co. will be live in Christchurch, Wellington and Auckland, recording new episodes of the podcast. Then when she gets back, Deborah will be headlining the WOW Women of the World Festival on Saturday the 7th of March with a spectacular Guilty Feminist episode. You can get tickets for that by going to southbankcentre.co.uk. We'll also be doing another live tour this year. These are shows which will not be recorded for the podcast, so the only way to find out what's in them is to come along and see for yourself. We kick off on the 1st of May at the Hammersmith Apollo, and then we're going all over the UK. Check out guiltyfeminist.com for all the dates and to book. And Deborah's film, Say My Name, is now available to buy or rent on iTunes and YouTube, and you can find the links on guiltyfeminist.com for that as well. We also have merch available if you want a Guilty Feminist t-shirt, tea towel, mug, tote bag, notebook. They're all there for you on guiltyfeminist.com. And Deborah's book, The Guilty Feminist, is also available wherever books are sold. And now, back to the podcast.
Our guest tonight is a former solicitor and member of the Australian Parliament. She is the chair of Beyond Blue, Australia's leading mental health awareness body, and the inaugural chair of the Global Institute for Women's Leadership at King's College in London. She is also the patron of CAMFED, the campaign for female education, which tackles poverty and inequality by supporting girls to go to school and succeed. Her speech on misogyny was voted Australia's number one TV moment in the history of television. Please welcome the first and to date only female Prime Minister of Australia, Julia Gillard. Well, that's more popular than any UK Prime Minister has ever been. Churchill didn't get that after the war. Welcome.
Thank you.
I think you're the first world leader we've had on the podcast.
Hopefully the shape of things to come. Many more women.
Many more women in world leadership roles, and many more women in world leadership roles on The Guilty Feminist.
Absolutely, both.
I think that's what we're going for. Can you WhatsApp Jacinda Ardern for me? You must have
I haven't got my phone with me, but when I get my phone, I will.
Do you have them all in the WhatsApp?
Well, not them all, but...
which ones have you got?
I'm not sure I should be revealing
This is like a game of guess who, isn't
it? Yes, absolutely.
Only the nice ones. Only the nice ones.
Oh, so only Jacinda Ardern. That's literally just Jacinda. Well, look, you know what? That's lovely. Have you blocked all the others? Did you just go, Theresa May, blocked? Boris Johnson, double blocked.
Angela Merkel, muted. Oh, I feel a bit sorry for Theresa May. I think, you know... I get it. But I do think part of her treatment was terribly gendered.
I agree with that. I agree that part of it was gendered. And I agree that she was given a glass cliff. All the boys who made it happen just went, oh, you touched it last. And dropped it like a hot... Let her do all the hard graft and then said, oh, you're a failure, get out. And then basically Boris Johnson swept in at that point. He didn't want the job earlier because he knew it was poisonous. And then he came in and went, oh, let's just get Brexit done. And people were so exhausted by it. They went, yeah, sure, fine, Boris Johnson, just let's get Brexit done. So you're right. But in all other ways... Theresa May is entirely heartless. Now, we're not here to talk about Theresa May.
No, I'm busting to ask you a question, Julia. So I was listening again to your incredible speech on misogyny earlier this evening.
If you haven't heard it, give it a Google, international audience.
And I remember when it happened how I was like,
in the office of the show that I was writing on, I was like punching the air as well. Like, what were you, like, it takes me hours to come down after a good gig. Like, how many days were you awake for after that?
It kind of wasn't like that. It didn't feel like that in the moment. I mean, it felt like it was a speech that was having an impact because, you know, in the parliamentary chamber, you can see the opposition very clearly, and I could see them sort of going from animated and interjecting to increasingly dropping their heads. So I knew that it was a powerful
did
speech.
You? Could you
I
see
did.
That?
I could.
Oh.
But I didn't...
See,
I didn't,
that for us is not a good gig.
No. I did. What I loved watching again today was at the start when you mentioned Tony Abbott, he looks quite pleased to be mentioned. He's like, oh, that's me. And then he's like, No.
So, no, I didn't leave buzzing. It wasn't like that. I didn't have a sense when I walked out of the parliamentary chamber that it was going to be this huge thing beyond the parliament. And it was only when I got back to the office and already women were ringing in and it was starting to get picked up by overseas news services that I got some sense that it was going to grow into the thing that it's been for me and for so many women in the years since.
And has it been a bit of an albatross? Are you like, no, I've done other things as well? Like, or are you like touched that it's had such an impact on so many women?
It's taken me a little while to get to a sense of kind of peace with it because there was a period when, you know, I'd left politics and the only thing anybody ever wanted to talk to me about was that speech. And you would be there going, you know, I was in Parliament for 15 years, I was Deputy Prime Minister for 3 years, I was Prime Minister for 3 years, and apparently it all comes down to this one moment and this one speech. But as I've travelled the world more and women have literally dived across traffic lanes to come and talk to me about it, I've got more of a sense of what it's meant, and so I'm more at peace that that's the sort of top note of the prime ministership that people remember.
All world leaders want an historic moment. They do want an historic moment. That's your fight them on the beaches. I think, you know, fight them at the ironing boards.
Possibly fight them with the ironing boards, yes. I think.
That's a high five for that joke.
Thank you.
You thought of doing a little bit of stand-up comedy? Because that's an instinct right there, and you can't buy that. You can't buy that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Can I ask a question? It's literally my job.
Yes. Something tells me you will.
No matter what you say. When you are in those photos, because I know, you know, being a comic, it's often you're the only woman on the bill, or they take a group photo of you and you are the only woman, or there's two women placed on either side like bookends. So it makes it look like there's more of us. Or you're asked to run around the photo and land on the other side. Now, as a world leader, this is something that's absolutely abundantly obvious to all of us, that there just aren't many women in the frame. Did you feel sometimes othered, or that your womanhood was important to those men? Is there any way that you can get men to forget you're a woman and just see you as a human being?
It depends is going to be the answer to that. The time I spectacularly failed to was when I was the only woman at APEC. So this is a meeting that brings together economies that cover more than half of the world's total economy. And so it was men, and I was the only woman at it. And people might remember that APEC is the meeting that they always come out at the end in the funny shirts. And this meeting was in Hawaii. And President Obama, for the 2 days of it, kept saying to me every time he went past, "Don't worry, when we do the photo, we've got the coconut bra and the grass skirt for you." So
it did he say that?
He did. He was joking, obviously, joking.
Even so, Barack. Even so. See, I think that's quite... I'm quite surprised at him. Was he doing it in a way where you felt solidarity? Or did
Feel he's like... unfailingly gorgeous.
Yeah. I think that is the quote of the podcast. Forget Vincent. We don't care about Vincent now.
Would you say Barack Obama is your Vincent the Uber driver?
I don't know whether he can make ragu.
I bet he'd give it a good try. But we're not here to sexualise the former President of the United States.
Oh, yeah, don't do the current one.
Don't make the baby cry again. Oh.
Sorry.
Don't evoke. So, when... just tell us more about Barack Obama, honestly. Did you hang with Michelle? Are they the coolest people in the whole wide world?
I'm pretty sure they are the coolest people in the whole wide world.
Are they still in your WhatsApp?
I still get to see President Obama, yes, which is very, very nice. Yes, very nice.
Where and when? What happens? Tell us more.
All in pursuit of worthy causes. So they are creating their foundation, which will be very focused on young people and leadership. So I've been involved in some of the discussions about what the foundation can do.
And we're meant to be talking about leadership, so...
Yes, we are.
Yes. Well, wasn't that a great segue, Cal?
Not just hot leadership.
No. No, no. Sorry. Back to women and feminism. The theme of this show. So, tell me more. Like, does he have a car? No. Leadership. Back to leadership.
I've got a question.
Cal, you're distracting with this conversation about Obama. Throw your question
I've got an avocado question. I don't.
No.
What still fuels you? Like, given that you've been Prime Minister, you've got a foundation now about getting more women into leadership. Are you fueled by rage or hope?
Oh, good question. Good question.
Very good question. And I am absolutely fueled by hope. And
quite,
along the way, the occasional little bit of frustration.
Mild rage. Rage light. Diet rage.
I like that. zero sugar.
I like full fat rage myself. I think... rage it right up, baby.
I get frustrated when things happen, like... the World Economic Forum tells us that Australia's slipped yet again in the rankings on gender equality. And I get frustrated by things like they tell us that we won't close the gap for 100 years. Which means that my great niece Isla is unlikely to live to see it. If you just think about that, I'm alive today, my great-niece Isla, she won't live to see it. So a bit of frustration, but overwhelmingly I'm positive because I think we're focused on the right conversation, we're coming together in huge numbers, we really want to get this done, and we are not going to settle for waiting all of those decades.
Absolutely. So I have some questions. In your leadership research project that you're doing at King's College in London, has anything surprised you about the data that you have received in this research about women in leadership?
Well, yes, and I'm now going to use the words Theresa May, and you're going to get upset with me, but...
No. You're wearing leopard skin in solidarity with her, clearly. She loves a bit of leopard skin, does Theresa. But you always get the feeling she's caught the leopard itself, herself, and that she made sure it was a baby one.
Oh, harsh. But Let me just...
Have you seen her foreign policy? Sorry, go on.
Let me just intercede with this.
Sorry.
We at the Global Institute for Women's Leadership promulgated a piece of research by a wonderful Australian researcher, a woman called Blair, and she had compared the newspapers in the first few weeks after Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister, which happened in 1979, with the coverage after Theresa May became Prime Minister. So you would think to yourself, well, you know, Theresa May's the second female Prime Minister of the UK, things should be better. But this research revealed actually the coverage of Theresa May was more gendered than the coverage of Margaret Thatcher.
Oh.
So that kind of depressed me. And I don't necessarily think that it's the gender standards have got worse, because I don't believe that's true. But what it does mean is the media environment we're living in is one where, you know, the sort of rules about how the media will treat politicians are different now. And in the use of those new rules, that more space, the media is inserting more gendered stuff. And you may well remember the time that Theresa May was sitting next to the Scottish leader, and they both had skirts on, and the headline was, "Forget Brexit, who has won Legsit?" You know, like two women leaders, you should be comparing their legs.
I mean...
So all of that does frustrate me, but that's the kind of work we're interested in.
What, from your research, has given you hope?
What has given me hope is knowing that increasingly around the world, companies and indeed nations are adopting policies about family-friendly flexibilities that give the same flexibilities to men. And if men use those flexibilities, instead of it being a situation where it's only the women that make use of the family-friendly stuff, and so that puts them on a career track to precisely nowhere, if both the men and the women all use those family-friendly flexibilities, then no one pays a career penalty for having used them.
Speaking as I do for the childless everywhere, for people who do not wish to have children for their own reasons, for the environment, because they can't, for to be able to take that same time for other pursuits, because parenting isn't the only thing in the world. There are other reasons to take a career break. We should all be making use of those. It refreshes everybody. And nurturing and caring and nourishing the next generation is important. We can't just say, oh, it's this thing that women do on the side, and then when they come back, they get half their job back, but everyone looks at them like, do you really care now, though? Or are you really thinking about Timmy's clarinet practice? You know, it just, we all need to say that it's important to nourish the next generation and nurture them and raise them as feminists. That's what maternity leave and paternity leave is for. Can I ask, what are your recommendations from the research you've done so far for how we can get more women into leadership roles? And I say women, I include women and minority genders. How can we get women and minority gendered people into leadership roles? Do you have any recommendations so far? I know your research is not finished.
No. Got some recommendations. I mean, certainly in politics, the evidence shows that quotas and affirmative action targets matter. You can see that in Australian politics. You can see it around the world. So deliberately re-gearing your system, recognising that it's been historically biased and taking a, you know, meaningful step to make a difference. This, the sharing of the family-friendly flexibilities, makes a difference. But one of the things that we're thinking about is actually how do we measure merit in a more forensic and scientific way, rather than simply saying to ourselves, gee, that charismatic man who seems to have all the answers, he must be a fantastic leader, when often they're not. There is actually...
I've never noticed.
There's a great book by an academic called Professor Chamorro Premusic, which is called Why Do We Keep Promoting Incompetent Men and What to Do About It? I am recommending it as a great read, also to be read in public places so people can see the title. but it helps us.
I don't know what you're talking. He doesn't have a hose. He's not holding a hose. That was not a widely read news story, clearly. No. Okay. So your recommendations for us as individuals. Now, not every woman or minority gender person wants a leadership role. Not everyone is cut out for it. Not everyone desires it. Not everyone wants to give up the parts of their life that they enjoy to have it. There's lots of sacrifices. But if we are such a person who would like a leadership role, what can you recommend that we do?
Well, firstly, I think in aspiring for leadership, you've got to know why. You know, that sense of passion, what you want to do with the leadership, what you want to make a difference to. That's the thing that keeps you strong. And I meet, you know, young people around the world who say, I want to be Prime Minister, I want to be President. And I always have to say to them, and what do you want to do when you're there? And it doesn't have to be, you know, these 10 policies, but you need an animating idea that you're going to stay true to and that really matters to you. So that's number one. Number two, make sure that as you step along your leadership journey, particularly for women, you are studying the gendered bit so that you're not there thinking, this is happening to me because I'm not good enough, or this is happening to me just because of some eccentric reason about me. You're understanding when there are gendered things going on, and you've thought in advance what you will do in that moment. And it's, you know, one thing to call it out yourself, and that might be a great strategy from time to time, but it's another thing to have reached out to people who can assist you in that moment. I don't think we should put all of the burden on women who want to be leaders to address the sexism. I think everybody, men and women, should be calling it out for them. And whether you want to be a leader or you don't want to be a leader, I think, you know, one of the things the research clearly shows is that we tend to correlate likability and leadership in men and not correlate it in women. So we tend to think women leaders are unlikable. And if we're truthful with ourselves, I think there's probably a moment in all of our lives that we can think that we saw a female leader and we made that assumption that she's not very likeable. So one thing you can do, whether or not you personally want to be a leader, is not allow yourself to fall for that unconscious bias and be active in the discussions when other people are, so we're more fairly treating leaders.
If this is helpful for your research project, Vincent told me today a good turn of phrase is, hold on, fuckwit, G up. If that's useful to you, just pop it into the research pot at King's College. It could, who knows? The other question I had was...
Each year we put out a book of essays and we'll be looking for a title, so...
She should consider the comedy panel shows.
Well, this is, like, Julie, you've been so wonderfully funny tonight, and I've been listening to your podcast recently, a podcast of one's own. It's really great. And what I've loved about that is hearing you laugh and be funny, and it feels like we're getting to see your authentic Julianess in a way that we haven't before. And it's just been such a delight and a privilege to sit on the stage with you and have you nail some great punchlines.
Thank you. Well, I'm not giving up my day job for comedy. I'll leave that with the two of you.
Julia, I did your podcast recently. It hasn't come out yet, but watch out for that.
We're still editing. We thought...
Are you? We did it a while ago, Julia.
No.
I just wanted to announce formally that I had done it, so you have to bring it out.
We thought about putting an R rating on it, and then we just thought a few edits would fix the issues.
There was too much Vincent talk, wasn't there?
Most of the time we talked about how we both love Carla Zampatti jackets.
There was also that.
And if you're listening, Carla Zampatti, we do accept free jackets. Also Bianca Spender.
Did you have any conversations about pegs? Is there any inverse peg manufacturers?
I'm with you on the hunt for the perfect peg.
I'm literally going to walk off the stage if you just start talking about pegs. Can I just ask, you've sort of covered this about what allies can do, but is there anything that you would like men to do more of? And female allies who don't want to be in leadership roles, is there anything we can do? Is there something we can do that you think we're not doing or you'd like us to do more of?
Well, I certainly think anything I've said tonight also applies to men. At the end of the day, in many places in the world, many corporations, they're the ones with the power. So if they decide that they're not going to use it for change, then change is going to be that much harder to get. And I actually think men stepping in, not from that sort of smug feminist point of view of, you know, look at me, I'm off to get the children. Did I tell you I was off to get the children? I just want everybody to understand I'm leaving early because I'm getting the children.
Remarkable father. He's holding his own baby.
But actually, the practical policy changes that are going to make a difference for everyone, and being prepared to call it out when they see it too. I look back on my time in politics and I do think to myself how powerful it would have been when it really got a bit crazy if a leading male business person in Australia had stepped forward and said, you know, whatever you think about this, that or the other policy from the Gillard government, we actually don't do our democracy like this. We don't have this sort of gendered stuff in our democracy. Let's cut that bit out. I think that would have been a moment of, you know, would have shaken the whole thing up, would have caused people to talk about the gender stuff in a different way because a man had stepped forward. And so, you know, men can make a huge impact if they choose to use their voice and power to do so.
Dan. Is there anything you haven't said tonight that you would like to say? Anything that you came to say that you'd like to leave on the table? And if you regret it, we can edit it out. Or if you want to say something that will upstage the misogyny speech and replace that so people go, do you know, it's not the misogyny speech, it's what you said on the Guilty Feminist podcast.
I don't think I can replace the misogyny speech here and now, but I do think I can say to you, I'm intrigued by this area of women and leadership. I've got my own life experience, but I love the study of it. I want to keep talking about it. I want to make a difference. So I'm going to have a book coming out in the middle of the year on women and leadership, co-authored with an African friend of mine, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. And I want us to be talking about what we can do to make sure that women are leading in every walk of life right around the world. It would make us a different planet, a different place. And at the end of the day, democracy is about everyone being able ultimately mm-hmm. to see their face reflected in the leadership of their nation. We're nowhere near that yet, and we should be.
Say, it's been a real privilege to have you on the show. Your insights have been remarkable. Your punchlines have been unexpectedly good. And we can't wait to read the book, to see what you do next, and to show us the way with female leadership. We hope it's not too long before there is another female leader in Australia. And I personally hope she's more Jacinda Ardern than Theresa May. It has been absolutely wonderful to be on your podcast, to have you on ours. And the response of this audience shows that you're much loved in Australia, certainly by the feminists of Australia.
Thank you.
And those who hate misogyny everywhere. Cal?
All of that, yeah. It's been so great. How articulate. I've gone all shy.
So,
and you've got an Australian passport and Australian citizenship, so...
No avocado grooming for you.
Politics.
Oh, I see. No. Oh.
Okay.
But thank you. Sorry, you're trying to get women into leadership. Yes. She's so persuasive. I accept. I will be the next Prime Minister of Australia. Have a late night satirical television show with Cal, whichever comes first. Put your hands together and give an enormous thank you for your Prime Minister, Julia Gillard.
So that's the closest I've ever been to a prime minister.
No, don't you know Jacinda Ardern? Oh, no, that's Rose Matafeo.
I know Rose Matafeo, yes.
I thought for a second, well, we've got to be friends with Jacinda Ardern now. I feel that's our, she's got her in the WhatsApp.
Can I tell you my previous Julia Gillard story?
Yes, go on.
This is how close I got to Julia Gillard.
She's not even out of the building yet. It's a good one.
No, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Okay.
So I was at a dinner, like at a function, and Julia was coming along to speak, and she had security people with her, and one of her security men sat at our table, and he was genuinely doing the thing where he was talking into his sleeve.
Was
he? I said to the person next to me, do you think he's just got a little mouse down there? Like, he wasn't secure at all. He just had, like, a little emotional support mouse. He was like, it's all right, Brian. We're all right. All the ladies at the table are nice. They're all nice.
Now, we have a charity of the week. If you are from the charity of the week, could you please declare yourself? No? Well, then it's not you. If it's not you, relax, it's not you. Is charity of the week here yet?
Yes, right there.
Oh, great. Okay. Please welcome our Charity of the Week. Come take a seat.
Hello.
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 What's your name?
Hayley Foster.
Hello, Hayley Foster. Could you please tell us about your charity?
Thank you. So our charity is Women's Safety New South Wales. And we are the peak body for women's domestic violence services in New South Wales.
Wonderful. Tell us more.
We heard Julia Gillard talk about not wanting it to take decades to end gender inequality, and we really don't want it to take years to deal with domestic violence policy either. So what we're here to do is to talk to you about, seeing if you can support our charity in the cause that we're advocating on at the moment, and that is domestic violence in the courts. Did you know that right now domestic violence victims go through the court in open court proceedings, and they have to be cross-examined in some cases directly by their abusers? At the moment, we're trying to tackle that, and any support, we're going to be at the door with buckets as everyone comes out tonight.
Put something in them.
Please do.
And for our global listeners, what's a website that they can go to contribute?
It's womensafetynewsouthwales.org.au/donate.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
So if you can't donate tonight, donate another time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Cal, I've had an incredible time with you tonight. I really, really have.
Can I plug something before we go?
I wish you would.
If you are listening to this podcast before the 11th of February, unlikely, I will be in Christchurch doing my show Gifted Underachiever, and I'll be in Auckland on the 22nd of February before the Guilty Feminist doing my show Gifted Underachiever.
Gifted Underachiever.
And if this is going out after that, I'm so sorry you missed out.
Excellent. And we can follow you on?
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm C-A-L-B-O, Calbo, or on Instagram at Calbo Wilson, or I live in Sunshine. If any of you live near there, you can follow me around the shops. Please don't do that. Please don't do that.
And you can follow The Guilty Feminist at GuiltFemPod on Twitter, Instagram, The Guilty Feminist. You can like our Facebook page. You can go to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe, and give it 5 stars, or whatever you want to give it.
No, I think 5 is a good way to go.
It's a good number.
Give it a Vincent Worthy number of stars.
Do you know, I gave him 5 stars and $5 tip. I don't want him to forget me.
Did you tuck the $5 into the front of his shirt? Was it one of that?
No!
Here, go and buy your ragu something nice.
No!
I've had a lovely time too, Deborah.
Because I'm not a sleazy businessman on a trip to Hong Kong who thinks his wife doesn't know who he really is.
That seemed oddly specific.
I tweet all my personal stuff at DF Dubs, D-U-B-Z. So could you please follow me there as well as The Guilty Feminist? Because I get a bit annoyed sometimes. The Guilty Feminist has twice the followers of me. And I dish so much more dirt on my private.
Oh, you should hear what she says backstage. It's amazing.
Mm. To play us out and to leave us feeling on a massive Guilty Feminist high, put your hands together and make incredible, welcoming Sydney woohooing guilty feminist noises for the incredible Grace Petrie.
That is pretty fucking cool, isn't it? Blimey. Hi, my name is Grace Petrie, and I am a folk singer, and it's my first time in Australia. Yeah, I'm really, really fucking excited to be here. Oh! Goodness me. Okay, I'd love you too. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sing you a song about my niece. I wrote this song when my niece was born. She's nearly 6 years old, and her name is Ivy, and I wrote this song for her. I just want to quickly check, are you guys familiar with the tremendously terrible British rock band Kasabian? Yes. You'll see why. Glastonbury 2014, and me and my best friend, we'd had an awesome festival. Then we got a call on Sunday about 10:30, and it was back to the camp, and it was pack up the tent, and it was saying goodbye to Billy Bragg as we went, and telling our friends that we had somewhere to be, someone so much more important than all those VIPs. It was your mum on the phone that rerouted us. We got a hug goodbye from Phil Jupitsus, and then we drove all night from Glastonbury to meet you home when you were ready to arrive, Ivy. And I drove until the sun came up to beat you home all the way up the M5, Ivy. And being early for someone was a first for me, but I thought my heart would burst if you got there before me. And all the way home, all I thought was how I can't wait to tell you this story, Ivy. Thanks for waiting for me. Become. I can't wait to hear what music that you like, and I can't wait to know the future as you'll make it. Yeah, I wonder if I'll still be behind a mic, 'cause Ivy, maybe one day when you're my age, well, maybe I'll be singing from that pyramid stage that once I drove all night from Glastonbury to meet you home when you were ready to arrive, Ivy. Until the sun came up to beat you home all the way up the M5, Ivy. And being early for someone was a first for me, but I thought my heart would burst if you got there before me. And all the way home, all I thought was how I can't wait to tell you this story, Ivy. Thanks for waiting for me. For waiting for me to arrive. And let me just say thanks for not bringing Labour on until Sunday night and halfway through Kasabian, because who the fuck cares about Kasabian? And thanks for not coming during Dolly Parton. Oh, Oh, believe me, I'd, when I say I would have driven right up the M5 to be there when you start living. But I must admit that I would be sad departing, 'cause how many times in life do you get to see Dolly Parton like? Not that many, I... But I drove all night from Glastonbury to meet you home when you were ready to arrive, Ivy. And I drove until the sun came up to beat you home all the way up the M5, Ivy. And being early for someone was a first for me, but I thought my heart would burst if you got there before me, and all the way home all I thought, so I can't wait to tell you this story, Ivy. No, I can't wait to tell you this story, Ivy. Yeah, and one day I'll tell you this story, Ivy. Thanks for waiting for me.
Thank you.
Mark Hodge. The producers were Tom Zelinsky for the Spontaneity Shop and Jeff Ring for Australian Comedy Management. Recording by Adrian Walton. Thanks to everyone at the Enmore Theatre, as well as all of you, for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit LTFabulous.com. Nicole, do you ever take public transport? Because I can't... Trains. Okay, could you name a train?
Philip the train. I don't know why I've made him a man, but...
I don't mean like Thomas the Tank Engine. Don't you have the... I don't know, in London we'd have the, you know, Waterloo 2.
The South Sydney Thunder Flyer. That's what I heard someone yell out.
The what, sorry? The Manly Ferry.
The Manly Ferry. Mm.
It doesn't sound as feminist as it could.
No. A lot of pressure on that ferry. A lot of pressure.
The Manly Ferry. Let's not put...
I feel like...
You're forcing that ferry to be toxically masculine.
I know. I feel like you'd be like sitting on the harbour and you'd be trying to get a jar open. The Manly Ferry would be like, let me honk.
I'll tell you what would happen. You'd be in a pub and you'd say, I'll go and see if there's any food. You'd go to the counter and they'd say, no, we've just finished. And you go, do you not even have chips? They say, no, we don't even have chips. You go back to the table and you say, no, there's no food. And the Manly Ferry would say, they've probably got chips. They've probably got, they haven't asked. I'll go and ask. Why? Why do you think they're going to have chips? Because you think I haven't done it right. I have done it right. You just can't imagine that the... Sorry, this might be about my marriage.
Hello there. This is Tom, the producer of the podcast. I'm just letting you know that Deborah's film, Say My Name, which she wrote and has a cameo appearance in, is now available to buy or rent on iTunes in the UK or on YouTube. It's a hilarious romantic comedy about a one-night stand gone wrong. It stars Lisa Brenner, Nick Blood, Mark Bonnar, Kellen Jones, and Peter Davison. Look in the show notes or on guiltyfeminist.com for the links. And here is the trailer.
Say something.
Oh, baby.
Say my name. Say my name.
Anne?
It's Mary.
Stay right where you are. We're here for your stuff.
Yeah, we like shiny stuff.
Jewelry, laptops, phones. And even I know her name is Mary.
What?
Why did you shoot me?
Well, you started it.
the whole thing is kind of funny when you think about it. The cops arresting us while the guy was in the room.
Oh, police, get on the floor!
Oh, my God, don't they guys get on the floor!
I really don't want to ask, but could you, bail me out?
Can you take plastic?
Thank you, Reverend Mother. I really appreciate this.
Oh, Stanton Taylor speaking.
Kappa!
Calm down, Mum. They caught the pair that did it.
Are you telling me the two people that can ID us are in the neck?
I am out.
What do I do?
Well, you're gonna have to kill them.
What?
I hate you, I hate you. You're a curse of a woman. Why are you even here?
I'm getting my necklace back.
Why?
My birth mother left it at the hospital for me. And, well, I've never taken it off since I've had it.
What was your worst relationship?
My wife.
And your best?
My wife.
Oh, my God! It's Bollocks McGivern!
Bollocks McGivern!
Ah, long story involving a night in Dublin, a poker game, and a frying pan.
You know what? I think this is better.
We want to check on your girlfriend's fingerprints.
She's not my girlfriend.
And she has a previous for armed robbery.
Well, I said we're going down.
I am getting off this island.
Why can't I? Can I? Where would I go?
Somewhere where no one wants to kill you.
Mary was my name when I was a nun.
You wanted him to call you by your nun name when you did it. Well, that's hot.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.